Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hello, everybody, and you are in for a treat. My guest today is Manda Kalemian, and I just want to say welcome to the show, Manda.
Marcia, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. And for those of you listening, and if you've read my promotions about this, Manda is incredible. Let me just put that out there. She is the founder and president of a nonprofit called Rewilding America Now. And she has a fabulous web page that you can visit at any time that is just that name, Rewilding America Now. So before we get into rewilding, I thought you could just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Marcia, thank you. Wow, tell you a little bit about myself. Well, I like to think I'm an interesting and strange creature. You know, I'm just like anybody else. I am fortunate to have had the opportunity to have animals and horses in my life, and I've been surrounded by animals. I've ridden horses my whole life. I've grown up on the North Shore of Long Island, and one day I received an email, and I decided that, wow, there's something going on in the world, and it was talking about horses and going to slaughter and all these terrible things, and I took a look around at my life, and I said, wow, Manda, you're so lucky. You have so many opportunities around you. You've got to do something and use your opportunities and skills to create some change. And that's who I am.
When did it start? When did this a nonprofit begin?
We're about 15 years old now. And
okay.
I remember the day I received such an interesting and disturbing email from a local horse rescue on the North Shore of Long Island, out east actually, talking about needing funds and money to help take these horses out of this that were going to be slaughtered and to save them.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I think this is going to be so informative because I figure if there's things that I don't know, then there's probably things that our listeners don't know. So I think definitions are always very important, especially when it's something you don't know about. And as I mentioned, you have a fabulous website, rewildingamericanow.org. But I thought you could just tell our listeners, what is rewilding? What does that mean?
Rewilding, in its definition, means bringing something back to an original state of being. So it's used primarily for environmental work. So if we all walked outside and looked at the backyard and all the grass, right, in our lawn, and those of us that, you know, have a house or an apartment complex, and you see how the lawn is mowed and how the grass is and the trees are, that's not the way nature originally intended it to be. But if we stopped mowing the lawn, we stopped using fertilizer, and we allowed native plants from each of our locations to grow there, then we would be rewilding. We would be allowing nature to bring itself back to its original state of being.
That's so fascinating. If I'm not mistaken, you do live on a farm, right?
I do.
Okay. Okay. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit, but I'm just trying to visualize my perspective where I physically live, you know, in a community that I've lived in for my entire life. I have, you know, grass in the front. I have sod in the back. I have beautiful trees and plants. And, you know, I'm trying to think about what you're saying, and I'm finding it so interesting. And I guess what I would want to know is, why should we help with this cause? What's the impact of what this means?
So can I tweak your question a little bit? Because
sure, absolutely.
I'm going to just change one of the words because your question is such a good one, Marcia. Most people want to know, why should I care what rewilding is? Why should I care?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The individual, all of us. Because, you know, well, I'm not a biologist and I'm not a horticulturalist or, you know, I like my garden, but, and we should all care because we're living in a tenuous time and we are all suffering the effects one way or another of climate breakdown. And climate breakdown isn't just in locations that are having extreme heat. Climate breakdown is erratic weather patterns. All of a sudden, there are different kinds of insects, more of one kind, less of another. These are all the impacts that we are feeling from the breakdown of our ozone and our climate. And we should all care about rewilding because it is the easiest and most efficient way for each individual to play a role in their part and their part in helping to stop climate breakdown. So we have a beautiful planet for our children and our grandchildren. So we should all care because there it makes it easy. There is something we can all do. And then we have to remember that rewilding nature in and of itself helps us to rewild ourselves. And that's a whole interesting, mysterious conversation.
Yes, that's very true. So I live on the opposite side of the country from you. And so we don't have snow where I live, although there certainly has been an enormous amount of snow in the Sierra Mountains. We have had more rain than honestly I can even remember forever. And so our climates, you know, are playing an impact in this. Is that right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is, I mean, everything is impacted globally. You know, I mean, it's so every day, Marcia, I don't know about you and your listeners, you know, you don't even have to look for this kind of information. It's just always on the cover of Bloomberg or the New York Times or the LA Times. There's always some article about the ice caps and the polar ice shelves. Glaciers are melting.
Right.
And, you know, we're over here. So I imagine oftentimes it's hard to imagine that something that's happening so far away that we can connect with that. Right, you kind of think, well, that doesn't really impact me. But actually, it really does because everything just seems to be connected. This is what I've learned.
Interesting. That's fascinating. Let's talk about the horses for a little bit because you have a love for horses. Are wild horses currently endangered?
I want to say, you know, an endangered maybe is an awkward kind of word, but I want to say yes. We understand endangered as becoming extinct. And
right.
I kind of, if you ask the Bureau of Land Management or our government, they say we're overrun with wild horses. But I say that's not true because at the rate that the government is rounding up the wild horses, taking them off of the public rangelands, they're in government holding facilities that, by the way, Marcia, you and I are paying for. Our federal tax dollars, along with all of your listeners, are paying $5 a day per horse. Now, there are almost 90,000 horses in holding facilities. Do the math. Plus all the additional expenses. So we're at nearly $100 million a year of our tax money. So the government can round them up, put them there. And, you know, we've got 80,000 or 85,000 free-roaming left. They want, they keep doing things to, for you know, sterilizing and birth control. But when these horses are gone, these are the last true connection to our history. Many, many of these bands of horses has been roaming these lands for hundreds of years, and their lineage traces back to historical events in our society, our culture, our country.
That's so. That's very interesting. You know what's interesting, because I don't know very much about horses. In a typical horse's life, where they're not being endangered by what you're talking about, how long does a typical horse live? Does it depend upon the breed?
It doesn't depend upon the breed as much, I think, as it depends on the circumstances or their care, their life.
Oh.
There are many privately owned sport horses, right? People mm-hmm. have horses that they ride for competitions or horses that they just care as pets and hobbies,
right?
Mm-hmm. And if you take good care of your horse, I mean, horses can live way into the 30s. I actually have two horses, nearing three
really?
In my barn that belong to me. Yeah, we're 31 and 32. It depends how you care for them. Many of the wild horses we are finding are living a very long time. So horses can live into their 30s, absolutely.
Wow. Well, so... That's interesting. I mean, if I don't know this, then there are probably others that would be wondering the same thing. So, I mean, I really appreciate your expertise. So how would you say that wild horses are working to help solve climate change? How do the two relate?
So let me give you the problem.
Sure.
And how I came to the solution as to why horses can help us in solving climate, be a
sure.
participant in that, right? If I give you the whole piece, I think it'll help a little bit. So as I mentioned earlier, when I started the foundation, I received an email from an animal rescue, a horse rescue out east, looking for financial help because she was going to what they call an auction house. The auction house is where people send their horses, large and small, to. It is really an auction, but the auction is only, there's a week that people can come to buy horses and whoever is there, and when they don't get purchased, then these trucks come with these drivers, they call them kill buyers.
Oh.
And they come in and they buy whatever horses are left that nobody purchased at these auctions. And they drive these horses over the Canadian and Mexican borders. And they
wow.
sell them to feedlots. They sell them as meat. So these
wow.
poor animals, of course, have gone, whoever owned them. And, you know, it's shocking. A lot of people who want to dispose of their horses do it this way because it's just they drop them off thinking somebody at the auction house will take them, and the likelihood of that is slim. But
mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of, it's unfortunate to hear, a lot of camps, camp programs, people that have run programs don't want to keep the horses and ponies through the winter, they want to pay for the upkeep. They drop them off there. A lot of times, some of our intercollegiate, the college riding programs,
mm-hmm.
if they can't afford to keep horses, then they'll just dispose of them there. So it's really shocking what I've learned through the journey.
Yes.
So these horses end up in these compromised situations. Then they get... transported to the Canadian-Mexican borders where they are sold for meat, and then they are slaughtered. So this is what has been occurring in our country. And this email I received, and I said, I couldn't imagine this was true. And I did a little research, and then I found out that not only were these horses from sport people, but our wild horses. Our wild horses were ending up in many of these situations. They were being rounded up and sold for meat. And I said to myself, there's got to be a better way. How can we solve this problem? And I learned about rewilding. I learned about the fact that, of course, horses, like any wild animal, we only see horses like we do dogs, domestic. But they evolved in North America. They are a part of the North American fauna. They're a part of our wildlife. They are an integral component to the natural environmental system. And as an herbivore, they eat grass. And they provide a whole set of things that they do to help grow grass. Grass captures carbon. Building grass and all kinds of plants will help bring other animals, which we call biodiversity. When we build these systems, we are creating healthy environmental systems that help to capture carbon, help with the greenhouse gases, help to bring animals back, healthy environment, healthy air, healthy people.
Wow. So I don't think most of us would ever even know any of this. This is so fascinating to me.
Well, I appreciate that, and it is true because, you know, when you say to somebody horse and dog, you don't imagine horses as being wild, I think, as you would imagine wolves or bears, right?
Right, right, coyotes, yes, those things. Wow.
But horses are native to North America. They were wild before we domesticated them. And all animals play an important environmental role for us.
That's fascinating. And I mentioned it at the beginning that you own a farm on Long Island, but you work with animal rescue groups, right, ranging anything from horses to goats. So why don't you tell us about that and how you welcome visitors to learn through your special workshops and events at the Rewilding Space. I'd like to hear more about that.
So when I began this journey, I, of course, am one of the people, I'm a big believer that I can't talk the talk unless you walk the walk.
Right.
Because, so I am very fortunate to have a horse farm here on Long Island, and it's 16 acres.
Wow.
So I took a look around. And I said, well, I have to stop mowing the lawn. And I have to, no more fertilizer. I always use natural or organic, but I said, no more of this, no more of that. And for several years, the place just grew crazy. It was just wild, the things that were growing here and there. And I just kept saying, look, it's wild, and isn't this great? And as I grew and did more work, I realized, or I was told actually, there's a difference between abandonment, abandoning any of your grasses and property, and rewilding. So all I had done was allowed all the non-native plants that have found their way here to overcome everything, all the native species. So then I spent the next 3 or 4 years with, of course, the educated people that could teach me. And we went through the whole property and we took out all the non-native species, the species that were invasive, that were taking over. And all the native plants were able to come up through the ground and the grasses that had been waiting there for so long. And it's just, you must see, it's amazing. Between the birds, we have an apiary of bees, we've got goats, we have our horses. So we've divided up the space into 6 or 7 varying locations. And I welcome everybody to come. And we go on little, just, you know, walkabouts and tours and just take a little look at the little, all the different spaces that you can create with native species to your area without mowing the lawn, without having it look like everybody else's lawn, but it looks the way nature intended it to. It's all the plants that nature provided for the areas to which we live. And those plants are the plants that bring the animals, because the animals and the birds in this area are supposed to be eating and comfortable in the native plants that the area provides.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about some legislation. Can you tell me a little bit about how the legislation plays a part in this? Because I think your nonprofit is involved in that.
Yes. So when I decided to save these horses, and or to try anyway, to change what was happening in Washington and how to find a solution. And, Marcia, I want to stress, everything that we do, we are bipartisan, and we don't have a side. We just go straight down the middle. We want to work with everybody. Everybody has an opinion. And, you know, there's good and bad and right and wrong in all thoughts. So we must find the balance in between and work for a solution. So in doing that, I set out to educate on rewilding, and I found my way into Congress through one particular congressman at the time that I had met, who was very interested, and all of these conversations resonated with him. And when I suggested rewilding and working with Native communities and taking our wild horses and creating these rewilding initiatives in Native communities and on lands that were no longer being used for farming or certain things like this, there was tremendous interest. And we were actually, in 2020, able to get the first time rewilding language was ever put into the president's budget bill in appropriations. So it says that rewilding is a viable solution for managing wild horses and should be considered as such. And it will be there forever. So it was a highlight in my life, I can tell you that.
I'm sure.
We educate and continue on with that premise and the projects that we're working on so that we can keep our projects moving forward, change the consensus in Washington about the value of horses and why they are native and can help us, and try to switch, right? Let's use those federal tax dollars for good things.
What I'm curious about you, because I think the subject is important, but I'm a people person, and I'm always curious about people. What was your collegiate? I don't know. Maybe there wasn't anything that you studied in college, but did you? It sounds like you're highly educated. So, am I accurate in saying that? Because you seem so well informed.
So I appreciate that. And this is the thing I'm most proud of, Marcia. I never thought about it because nobody's asked me the question you've asked me. No, I taught myself everything I know.
Wow. You are self-taught.
I have to be honest. I wasn't a great student. I was okay. I made it through. And I was not an academic. I never saw myself. I'm a creative person. I'm a visionary person. But this is who I am and who I'm meant to be, because it just resonates with me so. And like a sponge, I try to learn from everybody. I Google search and have educated myself online as best I can, all the time. But my best teacher, my most amazing teacher, is our head and chief science advisor, Dr. Ross McPhee from the American Museum of Natural History. I've listened to him. He has been my educator. I always say try to be a good student, but he's taught me so much, and understanding the science side of everything.
Right, right. I mean, because that's what I was thinking about. It was like, how did you come to know all of this? And to, I mean, it's you know, you're not asking to please toot the horn right now, but it is really remarkable, because I suppose one could say what's quite clear is that it's a passion, and you feel very strongly about this. Were you always around horses, even as a child?
I have to say I was. I was
okay.
3 years old. My dad
wow.
put me on a pony ride.
Isn't that something?
And yeah, that was my destiny.
So I guess there's really, I don't want to say there's no stupid questions, because, I mean, maybe there are stupid questions, but I like to think I don't ask stupid questions. So when I think of horses, okay, I'm going to visualize what I see. And I have been on your side of the country. When I think of barns, and I think of cows and horses and goats and roosters and chickens and all that, my mind goes to hay.
Mm.
It does. Because in my mind, that's what horses eat. Are you saying that? Are you looking to make a change in that? Rather than horses eating hay, that they eat the natural grasses that are growing along all the fields?
Well, no. What I'm
okay.
saying is, so first let's understand, what is hay?
Yes,
hay
please.
Hay is just dried grass.
Okay.
Well, hay is just grass, fields of different kinds of grasses. Timothy grasses, orchard grass mixes, I mean, alfalfa, all kinds of different
uh-huh.
grasses that people cut. Right? They cut down fields of grasses, and they roll them up into a ball, and they press it and becomes a bale of hay. And why do we have hay? We have hay because we have domesticated horses, and we have farm animals that don't free range anymore because they don't roam free. But if your animals were in fields of grass roaming free, they wouldn't need to eat hay. So horses are herbivores. Horses, like cows, like bison, are large herbivores, and their function is to eat grass. Horses are very good because out in the wild, they also eat dried leaves, dried grasses, right? Like hay. They eat all of that. And oftentimes, the more of the dried hays and grasses, leaves they eat when they're living in the wild, can help with wildfires because there's less of the dried brush to catch fire. But
so,
hay is our creation, right, to use to keep domestic animals.
Right. So if you just don't, you have 16 acres, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, I shouldn't assume anything is obviously. I'm presuming, do you water those, or does Mother Earth water those 16 acres?
Well, in the era of climate breakdown that we are living in on the North Shore of Long Island, we are just drowning in rain. We're here.
Mm.
For the last year or so, but mm-hmm. like anything, because I have a small farm and I want to maintain it to have things grow a certain way, I've rewilded locations, but I don't have enough land to not water. So I do have sprinklers, and I do water certain areas so that I can maintain the plants and the grasses that I have and the clover. But in the wild, right, in America's West, those things we don't want. There's no, you know, it's
sprinklers.
We have no sprinklers. The sprinklers come from the sky.
Right. That's fascinating.
That is the system, but this is the whole plight of climate change and cattle ranching and people that have leases because of the climate, because of the mega drought, because of all of these things, the ground is drying up. There is no place for cattle to range. There is nothing. This is what's happening. This is why they're fighting over, you know, the land on our public mm-hmm. land. Climate breakdown is real.
So it sounds like there's a lot of science behind this and education and research. Is this what helped you to spearhead your research to create this legislation?
Yes, of course. Well, the impetus, of course, is mm-hmm. to save the wild horses. And when we save our wild horses, we are actually helping to open up the portals to save all the animals, because when we create rewilding initiatives to bring our horses to, and our horses are free roaming and they eat grass, and the way it works is when you eat grass, they stimulate growth, sort of like a haircut, chopping across mm-hmm. the lawn, and then they eat the grasses and the plants and the things that have seeds. They're like a little machine. They eat, they chew, it goes right through their system and comes out the other end. And then they keep moving around. So the seeds come out the other end in their manure, and so the mm-hmm. seeds reseed. So we're stimulating grass growth by chewing, by eating. Then we're reseeding, right, for the seeds that come through the horse and out the other end and moving around. So while we do that, we're stimulating growth. And as we stimulate growth and more grasses and more plants, in the roots, the carbon process is captured in the roots of the plants and the grasses in the ground. And that is how we can stop much of the greenhouse gases, right? Greenhouse emissions. We hear these words. What does it really mean? I think that's the biggest issue for people. What is carbon sequestration? What is biodiversity? What are greenhouse gases? Do I see them? Can I smell it? I mean, people don't even know. Why is climate change or breakdown happening? What actually, what is it? How does that affect me? And so, yeah, so when horses, we put them out there as herbivores to do what they just physiologically know how to do. Mm-hmm. They help us. That's why we call them a keystone species. They're like the center, the most important. And around them, then they create the system, right? If we have grass and bushes, and then little animals come. And if the little animals come, then the eagles and the hawks and the big birds mm-hmm. come, because they eat the little animals. And then the predators come, and it's sort of that, are you smarter than a fifth grader kind of thing.
That's funny. How does the Rewilding America Now connect with the Native American culture?
Oh, thank you for asking me. That's my favorite topic. After the horses. After the horses. It's truly, truly in my heart. Well, when I set off on this journey of mm-hmm. self-discovery, right? It's my journey of self-discovery while I'm saving our horses. I always believed that Native culture, Native American people, who would understand the natural ways, the natural systems, who understands the balance of nature better than the original Americans to our planet,
mm-hmm.
right? Native culture, Native people, all the many tribes, although everybody may have a different way of understanding and honoring, it's the same original teachings mm-hmm. of Creator that have been brought down through our Native people. And so we need to understand and work with them. We need to understand their traditional knowledge. They need to help educate us so that we can help to create these rewilding systems and places. What I've learned on my journey is that their traditional ecological knowledge, the rewilding is really just a scientific way of understanding the traditional ecological knowledge. It's we must work together where it's one thought. And so I sought out to build relationships and seek out understanding of traditional knowledge. And so I have spent many years building bridges and learning and understanding the needs of many of the Native communities and how our rewilding initiatives and working with them can help. We can learn from them and we can help.
Yeah, you're a team. I can hear that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a couple of other things because you are just an amazing person. So you've written a book, Born to Rewild, Triumphs of a Now Fearless Woman. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Like
you haven't had enough to do, right? Let's write a book now.
No. Well, I will tell you, it all happened during COVID.
Well,
it was a COVID book.
Okay.
And I had been thinking for some time, I have to write a book. And then I'm thinking, well, just what the world needs, another biography, another story about, somebody's journey. Why would people want to know about my story? Why would anybody read this book? And I really wanted to make the book so that people would understand about the horses, because it's not about me. It's not about me, really. At the end of the day, it's about you. It's about all of your listeners, because everything that happens really affects us. So how can I share the information that I've learned with everybody and have them see what's happening to the horses, what our federal dollars are paying for and what's happening and how saving the horses really is saving us and people should know and understand. So COVID came about and here we are trapped with our families and our lives, and I said, you know what? I think I meant to write the book now. This is the time. Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to a woman who is amazing, Darlene Newman. I highly recommend all your listeners should. She's got a travel show on PBS, Travels with Darlene, and she's amazing. She actually did a book on equitrucking. It was travel on horseback, all the places you can go in Europe.
Oh.
Yeah, and do all this on horses, traveling around. And it was amazing. So she and I connected, and she'd never done this for anybody before, and I'd never written a book before. So we were perfect.
Match
we
made in heaven.
Yes. So we decided to give it a whirl, and it was amazing, and it worked out beautifully, and she knew exactly how to put things and the right questions to ask me, and I knew, and then she'd send me things, and it would spur thoughts, and then I'd write things and send them back, and Born to Rewild is an easy book. It's an easy read. You know, it's just I tried to be as honest and truthful, just who I am, why I'm doing this, in a kind of fun way, and it gives you information in a cohesive way that tells you what's happening to the horses, why that should matter to you. It gives you some science to understand, not in an overwhelming way, and it's a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story.
Nice.
We're on a journey to save these horses. I want you to root for me.
Yeah.
Can we get this done? And then I want you to do something. That's my I want everybody who reads the book to feel that there's one something out there
that
for
they
them
can
to
do.
Yes.
Right. Just whatever touches you. I think that's terrific. I think that's a terrific idea. And you've got a couple of projects underway currently in the Dakotas, right? You want to tell us about that?
We do. We do. Well, we have one in North Dakota and one in South Dakota. And,
which one's in which?
So we there's an amazing gentleman that I had, a rancher, that I had met, maybe 6-7 years ago, and he has the Nakota horses, actually. He has the horses for the Nakota Conservancy on his property, and he believes in horses 1,000%. They've grown grass when other people in his community have cattle on their land, and there's they're in a bad season and there's drought, and where the cattle are has no grass. The horses always have grass. Always have grass. And he moves them around and they rotate and graze in different areas, and the grass always grows, and he has crops. And I met him and I said, I must learn from you. And he's the most, he and his wife are just the loveliest, most incredible people. And so we are working with him to take what he's going to be educating people. He's part of our educational program and component that we're working on. And he also, we will have horses that are going to be coming there to his location. And we're going to be working on monitoring where the grass grows and carbon capture and all kinds of amazing projects as far as the grass and education and how to manage horses so that they can help you grow grass in large areas and you can grow crops at the same time.
So is this the one at Standing Rock? Is this the Brown Otter Ranch? Is that the one you're just talking about?
No. The Brown Otter Ranch is in South Dakota.
Oh, well, okay, let me interrupt for a moment then. Which is the one that's in North Dakota? Is that the...
That's the Silbernagel Ranch.
I see. So that's the North Dakota, and then the Brown Otter is in South Dakota. Okay.
Yes. Ron and his lovely wife, Carol, are in South Dakota. They are members of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. They are... I'm so lucky. They're so amazing, all these people. And he is doing something. He is the largest private buffalo rancher, native buffalo rancher in South Dakota. And he is raising native buffalo and to feed his people again, to feed
That's
his
wonderful.
Community in the original way, the original way. Right? Most of Native people in the plains areas here ate buffalo meat.
Yeah.
And so he is raising these amazing buffalo. You should see them. He is bringing buffalo back, ranching for his community. And we have horses. We rescued horses from one of the holding facilities this summer, and we've released horses there with his buffalo. And we will be working with traditional ecological knowledge, people in their community, and this summer we're really going to be coming together where we're initiating these programs and projects for the community there and to bring outside people in. So we're bringing science together with traditional knowledge. And
that's wonderful.
Yes, native grasses and buffalo.
Fabulous.
It's amazing. It's amazing,
It is. And you've worked with some pretty remarkable people. You want to just share a little bit about the connections that you have in the industry? Because it's amazing to me.
Oh, you're so nice. Well, it's been a journey. I've met very interesting people. I've met lots of different congressional members.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had lots of congressional members come to the farm. And it's always interesting to meet people, congressional members from different places, and to talk to them about something that they don't know about.
Sure.
I've met many different people from that. I've had the great opportunity to meet lots of people in finance. I've met some handful of celebrities, or, you know, when you're trying to get somebody to see you, hi, save the horses, you know, you need everybody and anybody to help. But, you know, I mean, are you talking about my friend Moses Brings Plenty?
Well, let's talk about him, and let's talk about Michael as well. So pick which one you'd like to talk about first.
Well, I would talk whoever you like to. Who should I talk about first?
Let's talk about Michael. Who's Michael?
I was going to say, let's talk about Michael.
Here we go.
Michael Nathanson is just, it's such an amazing thing. So it's the journey. Remember, when you set out to do good things, really amazing things happen on your journey. If you just, you have to believe. So I want to say it was about a year and a half ago, through a friend of mine who was doing some business with Michael. She had told me about a new business she was involved in and this gentleman named Michael Nathanson that she was doing work with. And Michael has been a studio chief. He was the head of MGM and other studios for his life. And she was telling me this. So about a year and a half ago, I met him in California through my friend, and we talked about what I was doing, and he was so supportive. He, and like everybody, couldn't believe it, never knew, and everybody has the same reaction. It's like, how come I didn't know this? You know, the horses and the money they spent and the rounding up and the taking them off to slaughter and all that. It's kind of like one of those dirty little secrets the government has and they don't share. So we chatted for a while. He was very supportive. And time goes on. And this summer I was in L.A. again, and we connected and we spoke. And I invited Michael to come out with us. We were in August out to the Dakotas to meet with Paul and Ron. And then we went off to Idaho. And when we got back, Michael said, you know, this was unbelievable, this trip. I'd never seen anything like this or knew people like this. He was so taken by Paul and Ron. And these are the heartland. These people are the backbone, as he was saying. These are the backbone of our country. These are the real heroes, these people and the horses. And he said, how can I be of help? I really want to be a part of this. And I will tell you, Marcia, I pinch myself every day. I pinch myself every day how lucky I am. And it's really, you know, Michael is the one that has taken us forward. He is spearheading our future. We're rebranded. He's rebranded us. We were Canna Foundation, and Canna Foundation got us to where we are today. And now, Michael, we are Rewilding America Now, and we have all these big projects ahead of us. And he is our CEO and managing director. And
that's
he has a clear vision of the future for us. So it's amazing. It's amazing. Did you see the 7-minute, you saw our 7-minute video on the website?
I need to watch that. I need to watch that, and I will. And people need to watch that 7-minute video. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, because Michael created, directed, and made that piece for us.
Excellent.
So it's amazing. You have to watch it.
Okay, what about Mo Brings Plenty? I'm not familiar with that. So tell us, is that from Yellowstone, the TV show?
So yes, but I know Mo from before the TV show.
Oh.
And yes, Mo and I, he and I worked together, and it's in my book. Mo is in my book, many chapters. And prior to I know Mo maybe 8-9 years. We worked together for 5 years prior to him getting on Yellowstone. So
what's his last name? Amanda, what's his last name?
It's Moses Brings Plenty.
Okay. Got it. Okay, continue. I didn't know that was his name. Okay.
Yes. Well, Mo and I worked together. He taught me so much about the Native community and the horses and the plants and the understanding through the Native voice and things. And he was my great teacher. And we rescued lots of horses from the BLM, and we placed them in homes, and we had some really fun, exciting, we did some good work. And he was a lot of the backbone of the work that I did for a long, long time. And we met through somebody connected us, mm-hmm. and I had spoken to him on the phone, and he had said to me, well, come out and see me. If you want me to work with you, come out and see me where he lives. So I said, okay. And I think he was quite surprised when I showed up. And he was quite surprised that I actually showed up. I said I was coming, and I did. And he said, you know, a lot of people come and ask me to save the horses and speak up for them. And I tell them, okay, well, come over here and see me. And they never show up. And he said, I always knew the person that showed up would be the one I'm supposed to work with.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, we had a great journey. And then he went off to do Yellowstone.
So I have a couple more questions because we have a few more minutes to speak. You sort of alluded to a new project. Is that something that you can talk about?
Well, I'm very excited, and thank you for asking that. Well, last week we finalized and acquired a large, large parcel, an extremely large parcel of land in Idaho.
Oh, is this the Birch Creek Valley?
That would be that. I like to keep it a little on the down low, right? We like to
it's
keep it
your,
a little, all right.
Okay,
so
it's
yes,
on your website.
No,
okay.
No. Yes, of course, it's there. But, you know, I'm a little, I like to be a little mysterious about it.
Okie dokie, sorry. Okay.
No, it's good. I'm still, it's sort of, look at all these things that are happening. Just amazing things. But it's an exceptionally large parcel of land. And we're going to be able to have a full-on rewilding project to scale, quite large.
Lovely.
And it's going to be very large. It's going to have a tremendous impact. And it's going to be on a global scale. We're aspiring to be like Rewilding Europe. We want to have projects of that magnitude that, you know, people will see, come, we'll be saving lots of horses and animals. So next time we chat, I'll have more info for you on that.
There you go. You know, what's occurring to me as I'm listening to you, a couple of things. One, two, this sounds like a documentary in the making. Is somebody working on a screenplay for you? Maybe you're not supposed to say. I don't know, because it seems like it's a no-brainer that this would be a documentary.
You're so nice to say. Well, let me just say this. I know somebody in the film business.
Okay.
I know
cool.
somebody who knows. I know somebody in that, you know.
Yes.
So I want to say, yeah, I think so. I think
I
so.
Can
I think
it's
just such a fun story, like a fun, good story.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But I could see you standing on a stage somewhere. I could see you doing a TED Talk somewhere.
I would like to do that. I will be honest.
Yeah.
I'm working through that because I would love to do a TED Talk.
Yeah, I could see that.
I want people to ask questions. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like a challenge because, you know, I learn things the same as I like to help people to understand things that I learned.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about your lifestyle. Is it okay for me to ask? You didn't mention if you had children or not, did you?
I do. I have two beautiful children. My daughter is 27 and my son is 23.
Okay, so adults. So I'm just, you know, I'm kind of thinking about your lifestyle. I think about my lifestyle and every people that I know. And when you are living a very productive lifestyle like you've just described, what I'm wondering about you personally now is how do you find the balance in your life between everything that you're committed to and involved in and stepping away from that and having some personal time? Are you balanced that way?
Wow, that's a good question. So this is what's happened for me. And, you know, we all need to be better at some things. And I guess what's happened is, so I have children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Husband, children. I used to have 7 dogs. Now I just have 4 dogs. We have 4 horses at the farm, 5 goats. You know, you have the whole 9 yards. But what happened is because this work is so much, it's my passion, it's who I am. It's not even my passion, it's just who I have become, it's who I am, that everything kind of becomes one. There, you know what I mean? It's sort of like you don't ever not think about this. You don't ever not check your email or take a call. So it just, you do everything together. I manage the barn. It's like all the same thing that I do. I have an apiary. So when I do the bees, am I doing the bees? Because that becomes fun for me. I taking care of my horses in the barn is my fun personal time. But it's really all part of the same thing, planting here. And that's what I want to say. When people rewild or you go out to your backyard and you say, I'm going to just do this thing. I'm going to buy native plants. I'm not going to mow down the dandelions. Dandelions are the most amazing thing. And everybody buys Roundup to kill them because they're weeds.
Oh, gosh.
They're not weeds. So when you do those things, those become your personal time. So could I use a little bit more time for myself away sometimes? Absolutely. And that's, I'm not so good at that. But this is my pleasure, you know, along with my family.
I can understand that. I really can. You seem very calm to me. So my first thought was, oh, you probably do yoga, or you probably meditate, or maybe you just go out and sit in the field and just look up at the stars or look up at the sun or, you know, just sort of sit there in quiet time. I just was wondering if you allow yourself any of that kind of quiet time.
And I have to allow myself more of that.
Right.
That is a failing, you know, I have to stop and remind myself that.
Right.
I have to do that, as we all have to remind ourselves, right?
Exactly.
We women are so busy doing everything for everybody that if we don't remind ourselves that we deserve something, right, we won't be as productive and good for what we're wanting to do.
Well, I agree with you, and that's why I have post-it notes everywhere. Slow down. You know, go outside, take a walk. I have a Google Watch, so of course it holds me accountable. And get your walk in and take care of you. Because, frankly, we cannot produce and do the things that we want to do that's so important to us if we don't take care of ourselves in order to do that. Whether it's sleeping enough, whether it's doing a jigsaw puzzle at night, whatever that might look like, you know, I'm presuming that you don't ride these horses, these wild horses. Am I right about that? They're not ridden.
No, I hear my horses, I have old show horses or domestic, you know, riding horses.
Uh-huh.
But, well, people do win wild horses. The Bureau of Land Management tries to sell the horses that they round up, and people do buy them and break them and use them for horses.
I see.
I mean,
All right.
that is what do you think all the cowboys rode, horses that they caught or wild horses? They became domesticated. That's how horses became domesticated to begin with, right?
Absolutely.
The Mongolians.
Sure.
The Mongolians domesticated them. They were the first riders.
Well, it's very interesting to hear your life story and your commitment to what it is you do and why. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing what's so important to you, because that's so important to me, for us to do this together. I'm just very grateful that you spent this hour with me, Manda. This has really been pretty tremendous.
Well, Marcia, thank you for your interest in what we're doing. That's the first and most important thing.
It's a step. And, you know, I live in a very urban setting. You know, there's not going to be wild horses around me, but I'm certainly going to be looking at my environment in a different light. And that's what you've brought to the forefront here. So I'm keeping good thoughts for your next big project and what
Thank
else might
you.
Be down the road. I definitely see the documentary somewhere in your future. And thank you. Thank you once again for spending this first Monday in March with me as I approach tomorrow my sixth year with Blog Talk Radio. When I first started doing these podcasts on Blog Talk Radio, it'll be 6 years next month. So you're sort of helping me celebrate that as well. So thank you.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And Marcia, can I just say, if people want to know more about Rewilding America Now, they can go to the website.
Absolutely.
Right? And info me with any questions, or
yep.
if they want to help, or donations, or they would like a book. Feel free.
Absolutely. And, you know, I thank you for saying that, because I make presumptions. When I when our podcast is over and I upload this to my website where people can listen to this, I have hyperlinked where people can donate, how people can learn about what you're doing. All of those things have been hyperlinked for people to read about when they read my blog today after the show is over a little later this afternoon, so that anyone that wants to learn more and even come to visit you in New York. So that's all on the blog, and people will be able to do that with you. So thank you. Just thank you. Hold your head up high and say, we did this. This was a great conversation. And I thank you for sharing that with me, and for all of you out there. When you listen to this, share it with your friends. That's what Born to Talk is all about. Conversations plus connections equals community. That's what I'm all about, Alfie. So I'm going to let you get on with your afternoon. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and everybody have a great rest of your week. So long. Bye-bye now.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Don't let someone else enjoy your refund. Save up to 25% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com.
Hello, saver. Whether you're saving for that trip to the tropics or saving for an emergency, now is the time to take advantage of Wells Fargo's savings options. Wells Fargo offers savings accounts that can help you save towards your goals. So, what are you saving for? Visit a Wells Fargo branch or wellsfargo.com/save to open a savings account today.
Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., member FDIC.